Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Today, the nutrient supplement that delays HIV progression. High salt levels, well, we know they're bad. Do you know how much are in common medicines and how that can put patients at risk of increasing cardiovascular events? The British Medical Journal tells us a nutrient that we don't eat very often in the United States, we should, watercress. It can help block breast cancer cell growth. Lots of health and nutrition update. Then from our environmental movement today, we're going to take a look at the ticking time bomb that could cause such rapid global warming, we'd be unable to prevent extinction. Also, transgene escape. GMOs are spreading uncontrollably around the world. We'll explain that. The pro-fracking spin on public radio, yeah, brought to you by Qatar. And also a commentary today. I'm concerned about the mindless spending of so many Americans. The debt matrix. Consumption at its worst. I'll be sharing insights from Timothy Alexander Guzman, Silent Crow News. A special report today from our public health segment, an in-depth report on deformities, sickness, and livestock deaths, the real cost of genetically modified animal feed, from The Economist and Andrew Wassily. I'm sure that many people in this audience only buy organic, but for those who don't, the meat and dairy products that you're consuming, in all likelihood, were raised on genetically modified feeds, and you'll be interested in the outcome. If time permits today, UNICEF has got one of the largest vaccine programs in the world going on right now. 1.7 billion, that's with a B, billion polio vaccines have been purchased by UNICEF. Why is that a bad thing? I'll do the math, and you'll see how. This just makes no sense. If you've only had 10 new cases of polio inside Syria, and you've had virtually no polio, and we don't even know where these people came from, and we know that they might have come from other places, why would you then vaccinate 20 million Syrian children with a live oral polio vaccine, you know, the one that's dangerous, the one that can give you polio, and creating thousands potentially of new cases of polio makes no sense. I'll get into that. As you see, we try to take on the issues that the mainstream and alternative media simply won't touch. Let's begin. The largest chapter in a textbook that I wrote with Professor Jim Feast on AIDS, called AIDS, a Second Opinion, was on natural approaches. And this came from good quality scientific literature showing which nutrients, which herbs, which botanicals could help rebalance a person's immune system. Now, that was almost 20 years ago. This is the latest from the Journal of the American Medical Association. They're reporting the outcome of a study of HIV-infected individuals who found a benefit from supplementing with vitamins and selenium, and that that caused a reduction in the progression of the disease. The very thing that we've been saying for 30 years, build up the person's immune system. We did it with over 1,200 persons suffering from full-blown AIDS at the Tri-State Healing Center. Every day, we were open 7 days a week. You would see in the eve of the breast cancer group like to be together because they like to share the stories and motivate one another. They came in the late morning. Different people came all throughout the day, but in the evening, persons who had AIDS-defining illnesses came. And I was there every night working with them, as were the physicians and the nurses. And you would see us in the kitchen making bitter melon juice and taking this up the street was Fairways. And the owner of Fairway, the founder of Fairway, is a friend of mine. And I get these stems that contain the anti-inflammatories, and we get papain. And they would be drinking these wonderful health cocktails while they were getting their 2 to 4 hour IVs of vitamin trips. And there was also a restaurant that was down the street, and we encouraged them to have healthy meals for people who were going to be in there, who could get a take-in meal or eat before or after, organic and high nutrient dense. But they took a lot of vitamins. And so there has been a model, except it was politically unacceptable. Why? Because we were challenging many of the underlying assumptions of the war on AIDS, including I was one of the leading debaters against against AZT. I remember at the time I was invited to debate five medical doctors down at New York University School of Medicine. They were all promoting AZT, and I was saying this is a drug that is so toxic, it is a DNA terminator, that for every HIV virus you kill in the body, you'll kill 1,000 healthy cells. And you're seeing people go downhill really quick when they're on this drug. And they just refuse to accept that. I said, why not build up the person's immune system? We have examples of how we're doing that. And I remember the leading gay physician in the United States at the time had the largest practice, Dr. Stephen Kaiser, who was there with me. And he came up to say, look, for the last 10 years, before it was diagnosed as or labeled as HIV, I was sending Gary thousands of my patients for him to work on their nutrition, and he helped them overcome all these conditions individually that we call AIDS symptoms today and AIDS conditions by lifestyle modification. And they wanted nothing to do with the natural approach. No, that was it. AZT. And so I was at loggerheads with him, and I wasn't going to back off. And so then when we got phenomenal results, they wouldn't look at those results. So here we have the Journal of the American Medical Association, and they're saying, quote, micronutrient supplementation has improved markers of HIV disease progression, CD4 cell count, and HIV viral load, and mortality in clinical trials. And these were conducted in late stage of HIV disease or in pregnant women. To our knowledge, there are no studies testing the effects of long-term micronutrient supplementation in early stages of HIV disease in antiretroviral therapy naive adults. Well, it's not true. And again, I see this all the time where people say, well, there's nothing that's been done prior to this. Oh, yes, there has. At one time, we were tracking nearly 15,000 long-term AIDS survivors who had either began and stopped because of its deadly side effects, the drug approach, and now we're using a multitude of natural therapies. And far, in a way, more long-term survivor using natural therapies than using AZT. So at least now, we are having mainstream consensus recognition that those in this audience who were supporting other people who were diagnosed with AIDS and rebuilding their immune system, getting them out of unhealthy lifestyles, including using poppers or drugs, you were right. It took them 30 years to catch up to you. How often do you use a cell phone? What do you do to protect yourself? Most people do nothing to protect themselves. And younger people have the cell phone up to their all the time. This is the latest from the peer-reviewed journal Clinical Neurophysiology. It doesn't take years or even months of exposure for cell phone radiation to negatively alter our brains. It takes minutes. Quote, from Natural Society, the phones used in this double-blind crossover randomized study emitted radiation, which is the popular fourth generation 4G phones, the phones everyone claims for, are what they want. The researchers exposed the right ears of 18 participants to the radio frequency radiation. In just 30 minutes, they observed changes to brain activity. The radiation levels were within legal limits, and the phone was always kept 1 centimeter from the ear. Brain activity was measured by MRIs twice during the resting state, once after the exposure, and once after being exposed to a placebo, a sham exposure control. Both the right and left hemispheres of the brain were affected by the radiation. Now, by the way, this is not the first study. On this program, I've reported on 22 separate studies showing you the negative effects of cell phones when you're using them. So here's my advice. Never hold the phone within 6 inches of your head. Use the speaker instead. Never sleep with a cell phone near you within 3 feet of your head. Shut it off when it's not in use. And invest in one of the little shields that you can put on the speaker part. That'll get rid of anywhere from 95 to 99% of the radiation that would be coming in through that part of the cell phone. So, we're going to be using cell phones, but we don't want to end up causing brain abnormalities in the process. Most people are aware that a high sodium diet is unhealthy. This is from the British Medical Journal. Quote, researchers at the University of Dundee and the University College London found that taking the maximum daily doses of most common medicines would exceed the recommended daily limits for sodium without adding any additional dietary sodium. They say the public, quote, should be warned about the potential dangers of a high sodium intake from prescription medicines, and that sodium-containing formulas, quote, should be prescribed with caution only if the perceived benefits outweigh the risk. They also call for the sodium content of medicine to be clearly labeled in the same way that food's labeled. That's important. The head author, Dr. Jacob George, senior clinical lecturer and honorary consultant, Clinical Pharmacology, University of Dundee, compared the risks of cardiovascular events, meaning non-fatal heart attack, non-fatal stroke, or vascular death, in patients taking sodium-containing medications with those taking non-sodium versions of the same drugs for almost a 20-year period. They track 1.2 million patients and found there was an enormous series of incidents that when you exclude body mass, fat, smoking, alcohol, history of various chronic illnesses, and even other medications, it comes down to how much salt's in your medicine. You are more likely to die, 20% higher likelihood of death from high blood pressure if you took the sodium-containing drugs. Okay, to this audience, did anyone know that they use sodium in any drugs? No. That's important. From the University of British Columbia. Now, we all know that garlic is good, and it can kill viruses and bacteria. In some cultures, they actually use garlic as a disinfecting agent. For example, they'll put garlic in water, and because they are the belief that the garlic can help kill some of the pathogens that are in the water. And they also use garlic in a preserving agent. Well, there's a new study published in Applied Environmental Microbiology, and they found that there's what we've talked about many times, a diol sulfide and agene, two agents that reduce contamination of different bacteria that you can find in dry infant formula powders. So what they found is that destroying contaminants in baby formula with a touch of garlic. Quote, a trace dose of these two compounds is extremely effective in killing the particular microorganisms in the manufacturing process. Now, we have many people who listen to this program who work at the United Nations. I've met these individuals, and one of them in particular is one of the highest-ranking members of the UN. My suggestion is pass this information on, that through any of the food programs that involve the non-fat dry milk, which I'm opposed to because of how bad it is for people, mainly women, who are lactose intolerant. but there's severe contamination frequently where the baby ends up dying of diarrhea. So get dried powder and garlic powder and ask them to put a small measurement of the garlic powder into the non-fat dry milk formula. That could help prevent some of that infection and death. And finally, watercress is found to block breast cancer cell growth. This is an article from the British Journal of Nutrition. And what they found, that this wonderful, peppery-tasting, very delicate leaf vegetable, it's related to broccoli and kale collards, and this was done at the University of Southampton, they could fight against breast cancer. How? Well, we know that the cruciferous nutrients work to turn off signals in the cells that are used to facilitate cancer growth, thereby starving cancer cells to death. And when a tumor outgrows its own blood supply, it sends signals to surrounding tissue to deliver more oxygen and nutrients. And if these signals are able to be blocked, then you shut off the blood supply, and hence you starve the cancer. And those nutrients, including isothiocyanate, and that's in watercress, that does it. So that's how it works. So one more reason to have your broccoli, of course, but to also have your watercress. Oh, and I'm sure you already knew this, but there's just another confirming study done at Michigan State University, published in the peer-reviewed journal Breast Cancer Research, high-fat diets in puberty, and that's the average American kid's diet, is linked to breast cancer. Quote, young women approaching puberty could reduce their risks of breast cancer if they avoid high-fat diets. You mean like pizza, hot dogs, hamburgers, bacon? Yep, those. And this is an important study. We want to do all we can to reduce or eliminate breast cancer, and that's one way of doing it. Now, from our environmental segment today, I'd like to welcome all of you who are just coming across the dial. We like to present information that is not covered in the mainstream media, but is always really scientifically backed. And we have about 7 different segments of the program. This is called the environmental segment. And I know a lot of people are very concerned about genetically engineered food. And I'm going to give you the latest on this. This comes from Elizabeth Renter of Natural Society. Quote, transgene escape. GMOs spreading uncontrollably around the world. I'll quote this. Test Biotech, a nonprofit organization, started with independent, non-biased biotech research in mind, recently released a report on the spread of genetically altered plants. Here's the bottom line. GMOs are spreading throughout the world without any controls in place to stop them. They have escaped their intended areas and are moving into the environment and even infringing on wild plant population. Now, this is happening everywhere, and we had better do something about it. In the U.S., Canada, Central America, Japan, Chile, China, Australia, Europe, genetically modified organisms are spreading into the food system. Corn, rice, cotton, flaxseed, bent grass, and poplar trees. Quote, coexistence between genetically engineered crops and biodiversity is not possible if crops are spreading into wild populations without control. Industry is contaminating biodiversity and our future seeds. Who will be held responsible? We're finding unapproved strains of genetically modified wheat in an Oregon field earlier this year. Genetically modified flaxseed from the 1990s is still being found across the globe. You have rice. During just 1 year, 2006-2007, 3 different strains of genetically modified rice were found in U.S. rice exports and subsequently the world over. There were 3 specific strains of rice, one of which was approved in the U.S. and the other 2 were not. Still, none of the strains were approved for cultivation or consumption anywhere else in the world. In total now, genetically modified rice was found in more than 30 countries, even though they had not been approved. I remember it was on ABC, on my Sunday evening program, 3-hour program I did for a long time. and I was reporting on why I was opposed to genetically engineered plants. And at that time, they had tests. I said, well, they're going to have them in the farm belt. They're going to be near rivers or estuaries, streams or creeks or lakes. And the moment there is flooding, you've taken the seeds out of its controlled environment, and those seeds can go clear down the Mississippi, clear down to the Delta area, the lower rich area. And you get a hurricane, you get a tornado, the wind takes those seeds up and spreads them. There's no way to put them back. And that's exactly what's happened. Also, the ticking time bomb that could cause such rapid global warming would be unable to prevent extinction. From alternate Tom Hartman, quote, if 250 million years ago you were standing thousands of miles away from what it is now, Siberia, in the first years of the Permian mass extinction, probably the most you would notice is an odd change in the weather and a reddish hue in the northern sky. What you wouldn't know, and probably your children wouldn't even realize, although their grandchildren probably would, is that a tipping point had already passed, and an apparent extinction, an unstoppable one, was already underway. Extinction? What could get America's leading experts on climate change to agree on something that the average American was probably not aware of and never heard of? Methane. Methane is a far more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide, and there are trillions of tons of it embedded in a sort of icy slurry called methane hydrate or methane clathrate crystals in the Arctic and in the seas around continental shelves from North America to Antarctica. If enough of this methane is released quickly enough, it won't just produce global warming. It could produce an extinction of species on a wide scale, an extinction that could even include the human race. If there is a ticking time bomb in our biosphere that could lead to global warming so rapid and sudden that we would have no way of dealing with it, it's methane. Our planet has experienced 5 major extinctions over the past billion or so years, times when more than half of all life has died in a geologically brief period of time. And the common denominator of each one of these has been the sudden pulse of global warming. Increasingly, it appears that a rapid release of methane played a primary role in each one of these extinctions. The BBC documented how, just in the previous decade, geologists had, by and large, come to the conclusion that a sudden release of methane led to the death of over 95% of everything on Earth during the Permian mass extinction. That methane is back, probably in even larger quantities, as life has been so active since the last mass extinction. We laid out the scenario and its possible doomsday implications in a short video entitled Last Hours a few months ago. And since the world has been recently sensitized about methane, we're now discovering more and more of it leaking from oil wells, fracking operations, melting permafrost, and even stirred up by Arctic storms. Just this week, the EPA reported that they may have been underestimating by half the amount of methane being produced by human activity. Meanwhile, the National Science Foundation just released a report that methane releases from the Arctic have also been underestimated. And as you've heard me mention many times on this program, the largest grouping of methane pools would be in Siberia, eastern Siberia, and the Arctic shelf, that could double the amount of methane. Now, we know that about 18% of the emissions, global warming emissions, come from animals. The 10 to 12 billion raised in the United States each year, they produce methane gas. So every vegan is doing something positive by cutting out the need for being supplied with the methane producing animals. So by going vegan, you're doing something very positive. In fact, more global warming occurs because of our animal production, consumption, than all the cars, trucks, planes, and trains, and ships combined. So it's a big deal. One more reason to pay attention. Now, possibly many of you were not aware, celebrating the holiday, that there was a very rapid decrease in temperature in the northwest part of the United States, mainly up around Montana, North Dakota, in just one short period of time, like a day. In one area, 20,000 cows froze to death. And on one ranch, hundreds of horses froze to death. And yet, this wasn't reported in any of the mainstream media. That's going to be the new norm, where you cannot prepare. If you're not prepared, you won't be able to. Now, when I watch 10 days out, my weather forecast, no matter where I'm at, because I have animals that require heat. And so if I see the temperatures going down, then immediately program is put into place to see that their health and well-being is first and foremost top priority. Hurricane shelters made out of concrete, heating elements, you know, backup supply of water and food, etc. Never have a problem. And I was thinking about this when I read the report about how many hundreds of horses died on one ranch alone. Thousands of cattle died, tens of thousands of cattle, and yet no one paid attention. How's that possible? Well, it's simple, because out in the Old West, in the great prairies of Wyoming and Montana, you could have 10 or 15,000 acres that you lease. It's very cheap. And because these are not high-density nutrient acres, meaning it doesn't have really good quality grass, and the animal has to graze, the animal has to walk a long distance. Well, how are you going to go get those animals? Where are you going to put them? It's not like having a farm or a little ranch. You have, you know, you really, it's a wake-up call. And mind you, this was the worst freeze in the fastest period of time with the worst climate reversal in history. If anyone keeping records, one farmer said that in all the generations, this had never happened before. And he was just devastated because of his love for the animals. So that's the new norm going on out there in climate change. Now, I'm sensitive to this because I'm doing a major documentary on the environment and writing a major textbook on the environment. And this is the new norm. Like, the worst typhoon to ever hit land in history will be the new norm. So, a suggestion. What could we do? One thing we could do, we could build or encourage to be built or support in building in every major community that is at risk, major weather crisis centers. What do I mean? Well, let's just say that you're in Pakistan or you're in Bangladesh, and you have 1 million people living in a given area. The floods come, their homes are destroyed, their crops are destroyed, their livestock's destroyed, many of them will die, and then they have to start all over again. The government comes in days, weeks, months late to help them, sometimes never. And so instead, if you had huge weatherproof buildings built up off the ground, built above the flood level, and in these buildings, you would have hospitals, clinics, you would have room for people, at least temporary accommodations, you would have deep wells with water purification systems, and you would have a secure warehouse that could hold food for at least 5 million people for at least 3 months, plus blankets and emergency aid. That would be a right way to spend money. They're going to spend it. They're going to spend it on weapons systems, corruption, bureaucracy, meaningless projects. This is one way that we could help save lives and save quality of life. A thought. I'm sure many of you, like myself, are amazed when holidays come around and the whole emphasis is upon buying something. How much money you spend. What do you need? What do the people you're buying for need? I believe that a holiday is a time when you come together with people you care about and you make that time together count, whatever you do. you know, if you get together with some friends and socialize, you go to a movie, you go out to eat or you make something in, you can do all that with consciousness. It doesn't require any monetary exchange, but rather a positive exchange of the human energy. Not so today. Today what we see happening, we see a massive exchange of debt. And that's unfortunate, because debt, according to Timothy Guzman, can be an instrument used to control an individual or a nation, for that matter. Let's just look at this. We are all dependent upon credit, unless you have a lot of cash to buy a house, to buy clothing, college education, paying off other credit cards, your utility bills, your insurances, food. Then the credit becomes a debt that you have to repay. That's our standard. It becomes a control mechanism. Why? Because the person that gave you that credit, the bank, the finance company, the payday lender, that person now, we could call the owner of the debtor. Why? Because it's a new form of serfdom. In today's world of unlimited credit, consumers become modern-day serfs to their creditors. In America, consumers suffer psychological abuse by them. I'm sure you've all heard of people, maybe yourself included, who've gotten calls at night, threatening calls. You must pay this bill. You got compounding interest. The interest is just going to keep going up. And if you don't pay it, it's more and more. By the way, in England, you can pay up to 4,000% interest. You heard me correctly, 4,000. They charge as much as 1% per day, compounded on for every $1,000 loan you take out. Could you imagine how that even passed or is made legal? And yet it is. As long as you remain in debt, you're in a form of bondage. And you have to repay that debt until the day that you die, because rarely is it discharged. And that's why I'm so disappointed in the whole mindset of Black Friday, the day that starts the most important holiday for the big-name retailers and Wall Street speculators, and that's Christmas. It's the shopping season that investors and economists and corporations pay close attention to as a measure of consumer confidence and the profits they reap from consumer spending. Major retailers and corporations like Walmart expect to make profits. Wall Street expects consumers to spend on Black Friday through the Christmas holidays. Why? Because they know the Federal Reserve's continued policies of quantitative easing. Economists across the spectrum predict that the new Federal Reserve chairwoman, Janet Yellen, will continue to buy U.S. bonds indefinitely, continuing Ben Bernanke's current policies, all the while consumers continue to accumulate debt. And this Black Friday was no different. It was marked by chaos, followed by violence as mobs of consumers raided shopping centers and malls for discounts and sales on flat-screen TVs, toys, clothing, and other goods they most likely didn't need. Regardless of the economic situation, consumers will continue to buy. I think that we have to take an honest look at what we're doing in our society. Take a look at your credit card debt, mortgage debt, student loan debt, auto loan debt. Earlier this month, Bloomberg reported that U.S. households increased their debt levels by continuing to borrow at unprecedented levels. Quote, consumer indebtedness rose $127 billion to $11.28 trillion, the biggest increase since the first quarter of 2008, according to a quarterly report on household debt and credit released today by the Fed District Bank. Mortgage balances climbed $56 billion, student loans increased $33 billion, auto loans increased $31 billion, and credit card debt rose $4 billion. We're only talking about the last 3 months. Quote, we observed an increase of household balances across essential all types of debt, said the senior research economist at the New York Fed. What's this mean? Why should we be interested in this? At the heart of America today is consumerism. It is the mantra. The population continues to stampede at malls and in some cases injuring and even killing individuals. Remember back in 2008, a Walmart worker was trampled to death in Long Island, New York, by a stampede of hungry consumers looking for bargains. There were also several people injured during the incident. And what does that tell us about us? Where we're willing to experience violent crowds pushing and fighting with each other over items that were on sale. It's absolutely mind-boggling to see average people become violent over products sold at major retail stores. Does this tell us that morality is declining in that segment of the American population? Regardless of debt the American public faces, it seems that shopping is the only thing that matters to them. As debt increases, it becomes harder for them to repay. Can the American people ever awaken from their dystonian nightmare of mass consumption of products they don't need? They're accumulating large amounts of debt thanks to the Federal Reserve's printing of unlimited cheap money with incredibly zero to low interest rates. And although many do buy their basic necessities such as food and clothing, buying the latest products that includes video games and other computer gadgets are turning consumers into lifelong debt serfs that will continue to pay their credit card companies with interest until the debt is paid. That can take a long period of time since interest rates are tied to credit cards and other revolving loan payments. According to the Federal Reserve Bank, which continues to print worthless money, fiat currencies, and other government institutions, the average U.S. household owes between $7,000 and $15,000 in credit cards. The average mortgage debt is $146,000. Student loans are $1 trillion, or that's $31,000 per student. The total amount of debt the United States owes to its creditors, namely China's, is at $17 trillion and increasing. That's because the Federal Reserve continues to buy its own U.S. bonds. Debt servitude is the new modern-day peonage as millions continue to buy products on credit, becoming perpetual servants of megacorporations, international banks. How? As you buy with credit cards or loans, the interest rates attached to the purchase is made in the bond, is the bond that ties you and the corporate interest or bankers for eternity. The debt people get into is difficult to escape. As interest rates accumulate over time, it becomes extremely difficult to repay since it keeps adding up. There was a film that some of you might have seen. It was called The International with Clive Owen and Naomi Watts. It was actually inspired by a true BCCI, Bank of Credit and Commerce International, scandal in real life, and it had an interesting scene involving an Italian politician named Umberto Calvini, who is a weapons manufacturer, who explains to Eleanor Whitman, the Watts character, that IBBC was interested in buying a missile-guided system that his factory produces. Then later is assassinated. He explained that the true value was not conflicts, but the debt it produces. Here's what he says from the film. Quote, Calvini, no, this is not about making profit from weapon sales. It's about control. Eleanor, control the flow of weapons? Control the conflict? No, no, no. The IBBC is a bank. Their objective isn't to control the conflict. It's to control the debt that the conflict produces. You see, the real value of a conflict, the true value, is in the debt that it creates. You control the debt, you control everything. You find this upsetting, yes, but this is the very essence of the banking industry to make us all, whether we are be nations or individuals, slaves to debt, end quote. In conclusion, it's an interesting scene coming out of Hollywood, which by every standard is a propaganda machine. Debt is serious business, especially for banks and corporations. What do you think a politician feels about the debt of gratitude that they're owed for the thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, or hundreds of millions of dollars that were generated by the by the ultimate bank and power behind the scenes. Do you think someone's going to take all that money and not do their bidding, not give them access, not listen to their lobbyists, not engage them? Of course they will. With all the problems the American public faces, with the prospect of a future war on Iran, how that will impact the world's economy, with 100 million people out of work in the United States, and a reduction in food stamps and inflation hitting food prices, there is much concern. Unfortunately, celebrities' personal lives still dominate headlines in the mainstream media. The war on terror has taken away civil liberties, and the war on drugs has increased the prison population. High crime rates in major cities remain problematic. With the rollout of 7,000 drones in 2015, endless wars, looming dollar collapse, the endless pharmaceutical commercials that keep people heavily drugged are serious problems for American public. Yet shopping in a violent and chaotic mess is the new norm. The media and corporate advertisements have turned the American population into the new serfs. Many people in the United States are accumulating debt at levels never seen before in the 237 years of our existence. It is a lesson to the world in what not to do. An economy that is consumer-based with credit is a disaster in the making, because that debt only becomes unmanageable in the long run, especially when the people have no means to repay it, their obligations. An economy based on consumerism leads to moral decay. When people become ingrained in consumption, disregarding the debt they inherit, they become immune to the realities around them. When the situation becomes intense with a rolling dollar collapse and possible war in the Middle East, reality sinks in. Then, when the necessities such as food and shelter become scarce and the people will begin to panic and lose control over their lives, who knows what people in America will be capable of. But then again, as you saw what happened from the Black Fridays, it's a reminder of how people react when products they don't really need are on sale. Imagine how they react in times of economic despair. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. I'm going to go to our talkback segment in a few moments, where you have an opportunity to call in and share your comments and thoughts and points of view. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And I look forward to talking with you, hearing what you have to say, as we have a lot to share. Still up, coming up, I'm going to talk a bit about pro-fracking spin on NPR, and we'll see what time we have left. Just want to take a moment to let you know good news for those of you who've been using the different special blend products that I invent and produce. It's been nearly a year where I've been reformulating, finding the finest quality of the original source material, doing reformulation. I'm always liking to improve and improve. But it also means there are periods of time when I'm simply low or completely out of certain products. We've been out of Power Berry Blast. We've been out of Cruciferous stuff. Well, good news, they're both back in inventory today. That means that everything is back in inventory today. Now, for Cruciferous stuff, it's on phenomenal sale, $54.99. Why should you be interested in Cruciferous stuff? Well, how about reading the scientific literature, just Googling cruciferous, and you'll see why. The number one ingredient, that raw coca, 5,000 milligrams. Broccoli, collard greens, Brussels sprouts, watercress, kale, mustard seed, apple pectin, turnips, arugula, turmeric, that's where you get your curcumin, horseradish, radish sprouts, daikon radish, ginger root, that's what you're getting. And that is super cool inside the body. You simply would not be able to eat all the cruciferous vegetables in a day to get what is grown at the highest standards, washed, then pressed, and then dried without heat, and then put into this powder. And that's it. It's just that simple. All in one single creation. And it's called cruciferous stuff. It's back in stock for the first time in 4 months, and it's on sale. But also back today is Power Berry Blast. The two most, out of some 300 created products that I've originated, the number one and number two are green stuff and red stuff. Third is Power Berry Blast. And for a good reason, I couldn't put everything I wanted in one jar. I could have, like some people would, but you wouldn't get the milligrams. You wouldn't get the high potencies. You might get 5 milligrams of blueberry and 5 milligrams of raspberry, but that's not enough to do anything. So I separate it up so you get really big amounts. And that's why Power Berry Blast and Red Stuff are really one product in two different jars, but two different groups of nutrients. Here's what's in Power Berry Blast. First, it's only got 52 calories. No saturated fats, no trans fats. It's really good. Cherry juice. You ready for this? Here's my new formulation. Talk about hitting it out of the ballpark. 5,177 milligrams in a single serving. You heard me right. That's not a typo. 5 grams. Why? Because cherries are in the top 5 fruits. Then I have a phenomenal amount of the fructosaccharides, 2,700 milligrams. Strawberry juice, 2,588 milligrams, blueberry 2,000, raspberry 1,235, blackcurrant 567, and then cranberry, bilberry, goji berry, aronia extract, acai in a 4-to-1 ratio, grapeseed extract, elderberry extract, raspberry juice, blackberry fruit, camu, noni, pineapple, guava, black raspberry, and quercetin. Now you see. Plus, get this. I increase the ORAC, the measurement of antioxidant activity, 15,000 ORAC per serving. Tastes great. It's got everything in there. You talk about free radical scavenging. Oh, yeah. Talk about all the superstars. They're in here. 20 exotic fruits and berries. Nothing like it. Nothing. Anywhere. And I actually put the milligrams. No one else would do that. Because I want you to see that this is, now you know why I took my time, reformulated. Sorry it's been out of stock for 4 months. It's back today. And on sale. $79.99. How do you get it? I'm going to give you a phone number. And I want you all to call this phone number. And you can also drop by the Vitamin Closet at 83rd and Broadway and pick it up there. And let's just see what that number is. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. See, every morning I get up and I use green stuff. And greens and grains, same thing. I could have put it all in one jar. It had been too small a potency to really be beneficial inside the cell. So I made two different products so I can give large amounts. Red stuff and berry blast, same thing. Cruciferous stuff, a class by itself. I put them all, scoop of everything, into my drink in the morning. So now you got berry blast back in stock after 4 months. Cruciferous stuff back in stock as of today and on sale. 877-627-5065. Let's say, before we go to another part, let's see who we have here. We have George from Bronx. Hi, George.
Hi, Gary. Gary, I'd like to ask you a question. Is there any validity to Ron Paul's statement that Barry... deeply buried within the Obama health care bill, that there's a section that will make it mandatory implantation of microchips in every American?
I have not heard that. They're now doing it on a voluntary basis, and they've been doing this for some time. But if you have any concrete information, I'll take a look at it, but I'm not familiar with that. George from Connecticut. Hi, George.
Hi, Gary. I was looking into homeopathy. How does one generally use this? And I had something I wanted to see if you could use after you answer that question. I found a diet and health and disease of 1906, 1926 that might has data in there that you might use. But can you tell me a little about homeopathy before I ask you
sure.
about that?
Sure. Well, first what you should do is...
How to use it per day? How
yes.
would you use...
You shouldn't be using homeopathy on your own. It has to be it has to be very specific, and that's why a trained homeopath will be able to test you and create a sensitivity for whatever you're suffering from. It's not something you can walk in and just buy something and take it and expect a full spectrum impact, because homeopathy doesn't work on full spectrum. It's very specific, and that's why you really require a trained ideally a trained physician in the field who will help you. And there are a lot of good books on it, a lot of good. Dana Allman's one of the best authors in the world on homeopathy. But don't try self-medicating. And I'm always interested in old materials from the early 1900s that give us a different way of looking at life from that time. Be happy to look at it. Just send it over to our office and I'll take a look. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Gary.
Oh, by the way, before I forget, I had a chance over the weekend to look at some of the latest dance videos that have been sent by people in this audience over the last year, and we finally had our editor finally took a moment to look at them. About half can't be used because they're just too dark. You can't see anything. But for the ones that can be used, we're putting them up. They're not that long. And it's fun. It's to look at the hairstyles, to look at the clothes, to look at people dancing. But one thing they all have in common, you see a lot of people smiling and having a great time. Thousands upon thousands of people just in the ones, I think there was one dance where we had over 5,000 people. The older people came early, and you'll see me dancing with a woman who at the time, I remember, she said, "Oh, will you dance with me?" I said, "Sure, I'll dance with you." And she said, "I'm 84 years old, and I haven't danced in a long time. And you ought to see her out there just having a great time." And all the other people, see if you can find yourself in the videos up there. Just go to Gary Knoll video, YouTube, and you'll see them. And or on my Facebook, you'll see them. And that'll bring back some memories to you. Your turn, Luann.
Well, yeah, I've had a couple of people contact me and tell me that they believe they saw me out there on that dance floor. I'm going to have to go up and check it out myself.
You are. You're in three different videos I saw you.
Okay, well, you've had some mighty fun dance parties, I know that. So I have an email here from, I don't have a name on this, but someone sent this over. And they said, "I just downloaded your Hidden Hand program. It's the best overview commentary I've heard on the topic. I'm a professor for 20 years, and I was thinking of relocating to a place that has a sustainable future." And she says, "I've been told Spain is the best country to move to because the land is cheap, the quality of life is good, and she'd like to know your thoughts."
I would say it's just the opposite. There was a time when... That is correct. In fact, I knew people who retired, a firefighter, a school teacher, and were able to have a beautiful home overlooking the water with a cook, a driver, and a gardener, and a housekeeper, all on their pensions. Today, you see just the opposite, massive unemployment throughout Spain. And it's tricky because 80% of the entire coastline of Spain is dotted with these enormous building complexes. They build over 200,000 new apartments per year, and they're almost all empty. And what happened was, during the boom, equity partnerships and banks were spending billions of dollars collectively in Spain, figuring that it would be an enormous bubble. In fact, Spain had one of the highest bubble increases in the world. Ireland was close behind it. Normally, a price of land will increase about 1% to 3% per year, keeping the value of the person's property at about the rise in inflation. We saw 50% and 100% increases, literally 100% increases in some places. So what happened was they built all these huge complexes far beyond what anyone in the normal population in Spain could afford. Well, then who exactly were supposed to be living in all these apartments, and how they got away with it? They made deals with local communities. the local communities would get all kinds of money, and in return, they had to give all kinds of breaks to the developers, and it ended up working against the Spanish people. Because right now, you can have completely abandoned resorts, huge resorts, with thousands of apartments and homes, and yet the electricity, the water for their golf courses, this is a very arid area. This is desert. And they've taken a desert environment and made it into these luxuries. Why? Because if you had a golf course, you were more desirable to have someone buy or rent or be there than if you didn't. But that meant that what happens when you're empty? Well, the city has to pay for it. The local consumers are taxed extra for it, and then it goes against their water needs. So it's just one massive blight, overdevelopment by speculators who figure that they could make 30 to 40% profit from day one. So they got all these people coming in their syndicates saying, we're going to develop this area on the coast, on the Mediterranean, and you'll make a 20 to 50% profit. Massive amounts of money flowed in to these syndicates. The building material was crap. They'd use a lot of very poor workers migrating up from Africa. They would pay them next to nothing. The building materials were not good. And now it's all showing. It's cracking, falling apart, and they're empty. Everywhere you go in Spain, empty. Now, that's terrible when you consider how many people have been dispossessed out of their homes and could use a place to stay. So on all levels, Spain would not be a country I would recommend anyone move to at this time. Okay?
Well, where is a good place for them to relocate?
If there's one country in the world that I would say would be better than any other, it would be Ireland, Southern Ireland. But I'll get into that in greater detail when we have more time.
Okay.
Thank you, Luann. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now let's say hello to Eutrice Lees. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we're talking about a global trend in aggressive displacement and deportation of people deemed undesirable, and today, being the eve of a judge's decision on bankruptcy for Detroit, our guest, who is former chairman of the State Board of Accountancy, says a lot of creative accounting went into the fiscal report submitted to the court.
Excellent. Do you think that we could ever pass a bill where all politicians and lawyers in the United States are considered a non-redemptive and ship them somewhere? Eutrice Lee, coming at you right now.
My life.